south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
It's me, Johnny, here once again, dispensing free advice that some people think is not worth the money. And those people, mostly lemmings, of course, who don't mind going down with the ship, have no interest at all in getting the hell out of Dodge. Which, in a way, is a good thing, because, you know, when you finally get the hell out of Dodge, or get at least one foot planted in Latin America, you don't really want those guys and gals to be your next-door neighbors now, do you? Now, of course, if you're a perennial optimist, you're bound to think that the U.S. can get itself out of any jam. However, this time it happens to be quite different. There are so many tipping points, crashing and burning, that it will take an absolute miracle to get the U.S. back on track. In fact, it would take a series of miracles. However, strictly speaking, there have been very few actual miracles since maybe the 13th century. And even then, if you bother to look them up, you'll have a hard time convincing any rational person it wasn't just a lot of hyperbole. Someone who knew how to write wrote down a story to get his own 15 minutes of fame. All right, let's start out with a little email from Jerry. He says, Johnny, if you need proof that the U.S. is slowly, maybe quickly, turning into the third world, you need only to look at the poor areas of any U.S. big city. I live in L.A., that's Los Angeles, not Latin America, though it might just as well be. I live in the other L.A., Los Angeles, on the edge of a Latino district, you know, where everywhere, and I mean everywhere, the signs are all in Spanish, even the signs in the supermarkets and the menus in restaurants, even the announcements on the electronic bulletin boards when you go into a bank. If that's not proof enough, the U.S. is slipping into third world status. I'm beginning to see that when I go into certain small Latino restaurants and tiendas, even when I make a trip to the bathroom, signs are popping up that say in Spanish, please don't put the toilet paper in the toilet. Use the trash can, the garbage bucket. Yuck. How nasty. Johnny, I've been to Mexico lots of times, and to me, that was the very definition of third world. When you couldn't put the toilet paper in the toilet. When there's a sign that says right in your face, you had to use the disgusting trash can alongside. A trash can, by the way, that's wide open, never has a cover on it. That's right. You can imagine the result if you tried to put used toilet paper in a can that has a spring-loaded metal or plastic top, or one of those rocking covers you have to push on to drop whatever you're going to put into it in the bucket. You can picture it. It's more than disgusting. Johnny, I never would have imagined seeing signs like that in the good old U.S. of A. Anyway, just more proof, another disgusting observation, another signal the U.S. is turning third world. Another reason, as you say, to get the hell out of Dodge. Jerry, you're right. More than disgusting, but I'm glad you brought it to our attention. Now, of course, it immediately makes me wonder, why would they do that when U.S. plumbing is installed to U.S. standards, which means it should take toilet paper. That's what it's made for. In the U.S. and the rest of the first world, 4-inch pipes are 4-inch pipes. That's why in Latin America, so many toilets don't flush as promised, so many sinks don't drain properly, and faucets dribble. Because everyone cuts corners and no one follows the rules. 4-inch pipes become 3-inch pipes, 2-inch become 1-inch, etc., etc. But in the U.S. system, that can't be happening, right? Well, not so fast. If you look at Latino neighborhoods and barrios in places like, for example, L.A., Nueva York, Miami, and Chicago, they're all in older, kind of scruffy neighborhoods that have seen better days and that are very lacking on the maintenance, as you've probably noticed. And the people living there, for a lack of money and resources, repair and rebuild old, deteriorating electrical and plumbing systems, not by calling a $100-an-hour electrician or plumber. Instead, they call the local do-it-yourselfers that don't know the codes because they're born in Latin America. They bring their third world Latin American standards and repair methods with them. Poor folks have poor habits. So when things break, get repaired, or added onto, they often get modified in those neighborhoods anyway, as is the custom south of the border. So you can bet there are lots of plumbing and electrical jobs that are substandard, absolutely not to code, and thus suffer the same problems and inadequacies that you'll find are standard in the bars, restaurants, homes, tiendas, and supermarkets south of the border.
In fact, my brother in Chicago buys houses and apartments that got taken over by the bank and brings them up to code, sells them again. He sees that very same problem all the time.
lots of substandard repairs that aren't up to code. He often finds he has to tear out whole bathrooms and redo all the plumbing. So that's what the U.S. has to look forward to as third world habits creep in. All right, now here's a short email from Victor, a gringo living on the Pacific coast of El Salvador in Central America. He says, "Hola, Johnny. Here's a little observation I have about Latin American girls that you have not mentioned yet. At least I think you haven't." He says, "I've noticed that Latin American girls will not want to try to remake me or change me in any way. You're right, though, about how they'll try to get you to dress better or the way they like you to dress. No big deal to me. But as far as your habits, your personality, your eccentricities, they don't ask you to change. Of course, we all have defects, and a girl will generally point them out to you if you ask her. Sometimes she'll ask the question first. She'll say, 'Is there anything you don't like about me? Tell me.' Sounds like a loaded question. It could be. Even so, if you go out with someone long enough, the question is going to come up. What don't you like about me, or what bugs you about me? A girl will point out your negative and positive traits for you. In fact, they seem much more accepting of our failings than we are of theirs. Just my two cents, Johnny, after having a couple of Central American girlfriends. Longtime listener originally from California, Victor." All right, Victor, thanks for that. In my opinion, your observation is spot on. Seems logical, too. After all, if you're living in Latin America and have a Latina girlfriend, the only other boyfriends she's had before were Latin American guys, and many have some very toxic defects that ladies know, as hard as they try, they can't change. It's the culture, which makes most gringo defects, yeah, we have a ton of them too, seem inconsequential in comparison. Again, just my opinion, but remember, I've been down here a long, long time. I've seen a lot of stuff. All right, now, a personal observation about Latinos and Latinas who learn English. That is, Latinos and Latinas who learned English as a second language. The truth is, I've never met a Latino or Latina adolescent or young adult who speaks English so well that if you close your eyes, you think they're a natural-born gringo or gringa. I mean a Latina or Latino who speaks English completely without an accent. There are two exceptions, though. A kid who went to the United States very young and was thrown directly into the American school system. Then the result could be perfect American English, no accent. Except, of course, for the regional accent, let's say Texas or Midwest or New York. The second exception to that rule is a bit more rare. That's when a Latin American kid living in Latin America all his life has a parent who's a real live 100% homegrown American gringo or gringa. Then the kid will often speak perfect English because his dad or his ma's speaking English around the house all the time. That almost always means, too, that the kid is going to an upscale helicopter school. We call them helicopter schools because those really upscale private schools often have helipads because that's where the Latin children of the rich send their kids. You know, the ones with helicopters and bodyguards, etc. I know, it's all pretty disgusting. It's all about the show, but what are you going to do? Anyway, almost all gringos and expats who have kids in Latin America either homeschool them or send them to helicopter schools. That means, of course, if you meet a young Latino kid and he speaks perfect English, you know, one of his parents is an American, or he lived the lot of his young life in the U.S. So then you might ask, what about the entitled children of the Latin rich who go to those expensive helicopter schools? They're 100% bilingual, so don't they learn perfect English too? Why wouldn't they? When usually half of their teachers are U.S.-born gringos and gringas, so they speak English half the time all day in school.
Well, if that's the case, and I'll tell you, I've met many, many a kid who were schooled that way. Their English can be technically perfect, but they still have one little dead giveaway when it comes to their accent.
A giveaway that doesn't appear with kids who have lived in the States or have a parent who's a pure gringo or gringa.
It's like this. With most every English noun in the dictionary that begins with an S-T, like, for example, the English words story, stupid, start, and standard. Turns out, even a Latino with almost impeccable English skills will somehow inadvertently put an E, that's A-B-C-D-E, in front of that word. As if, for example, the word study, S-T-U-D-Y, had an E in front of it, E-S-T-U-D-Y. So they'll say, study, or estamp, story, stupid, standard.
See what I mean? It may be very subtle too, but it's there.
Of course, when us gringos and expats learn Spanish as a second language, no matter how fluent we become, a local Latino can always detect in time a giveaway gringo accent.
There are syllables and words we fumble over, too.
That is, unless we lived in Latin America as children or had a parent who was a native Spanish speaker.
In fact, I've never met a single gringo or a gringa expat who speaks Spanish without some kind of accent. Even American gringos and gringas who have 100% Spanish fluency because they majored in Spanish or have a Spanish degree from a U.S. university. Doesn't matter. A local will still be able to pick up on their gringo accent. They never seem to be able to wipe that out completely. However, I have to say, the better your Spanish gets, the more you'll confuse a local speaker when he says, where are you from? Because if your Spanish is kind of crummy, he'll immediately know you're from the States. But as it gets better and better, he'll start thinking, maybe you're not from the States, you're from a country in Europe. Because, you know, most Europeans, especially European travelers, have learned some Spanish back in the home country. For example, the Italians, the Swiss, the Germans, and most English people I've met speak more than a little bit of Spanish. And of course, they've all got their own peculiar accents. Accents quite different from a gringo Spanish accent. In fact, I'd say when your Spanish gets above 60, maybe 70% fluency, you'll start noticing when you're watching movies. When you see some actor like Denzel Washington, Ben Affleck, or Kevin Costner speaking Spanish to someone for whatever reason to move the plot along because the movie calls for it. If your Spanish is decent, you'll know right away if that so-called movie star speaking Spanish really knows Spanish or he's just mouthing the words that are in the script. You get the point, but it's kind of annoying when you absolutely know the guy knows no Spanish at all and he's just kind of wangling his way through it without any real knowledge of the words. Oh well. But hey, the average American up in the States watching the flick doesn't care. They don't give a damn. The average guy just wants two things from a movie. A couple of scenes in a strip club and a high death count. Now, as for the average American woman, who knows what they want out of a movie? If I hazard a guess, I'll probably be wrong. I can't even get a straight answer out of my own sisters. They tell me they don't like guys with too many muscles. Yet the Marvel Universe, number one box office of all time, has nothing but extremely muscle-bound male heroes and villains in skin-tight clothes. My sisters, American ladies from Chicago, they're somewhat down on plastic surgery, too. They say it's fake. But they've all had a few nips and tucks on the side. So don't ask me what American women like. I'm confused. By the way, the Spanish-English language movie thing works both ways, too. For example, the very first Hollywood A-list hit movie for Antonio Banderas, called The Mambo Kings. The movie, of course, was in English. He spoke English throughout, but did not know a word of English, so he mouthed every one of those words without knowing what they meant. That's Hollywood. Stranger things have happened. All right, let's take an email from Flash Gordo, living in Mexico. He says, Hola, Johnny, from a decade-long listener. He says, you may or may not want to tackle this question. Here it is. With a new U.S. congressional bill being passed that may drive USA citizens' taxes to level similar to Sweden's, along with massive increases in new IRS enforcement agents, there may very well be a flood of tax refugees pouring out south of the border. Then he says, here's the question. For those no taxation without representation folks who would rather bail than revolt, or basically vote with their feet. What's your opinion on U.S. citizens becoming illegal aliens in Latin America? If that might be the plan for some, what countries in Latin America would be workable to simply disappear into the woodwork? He says, I would assume the best ones would be governmental basket cases themselves or possess multiple rural options. Or perhaps, is it better to fade into a thriving huge city and stay away from the highways and checkpoints? I would think that even a small farm in rural Guyana would beat a biofascist enclave in, let's say, New York City. At least you'd be far, far away from those rabid IRS foot soldiers. So, what's your take on it, Johnny? Thanks for all you do, and we'll keep on listening weekly. Signed, Señor Flash Gordo in Mexico Lindo. All right, thanks for that, Flash. But you know, you're not the only one who's concerned about it. I've gotten quite a few emails in the last couple of weeks about the same subject. For example, this one from Peter. He says, Johnny, so the IRS is going to hire 85,000 more agents. You think they're going to go after the rich? Ha ha! Think of all the people that COVID forced into the cash and underground economy. You'll be the ones who'll be targeted for sure. You're the low-hanging fruit. And the IRS always goes after the low-hanging fruit. What makes me so knowledgeable? I used to work for the IRS, too, for 10 years. And I also worked for H&R Block. Truth be told, many middle-income and lower-income people make errors here and there on their taxes. Whether they're intentional or just honest mistakes, the IRS does not give a damn. Stable middle-class taxpayers and small business owners are the low-hanging fruit here and always will be. The IRS does not pursue the scammers. those techno nerds with multiple foreign bank accounts who hide behind VPNs and such, because the scammers are always 3 steps ahead of the IRS. So they're long gone by the time the IRS figures out the scams and the scammers' locations. Contrary to popular belief, the IRS does not go after the wealthy people either, because most IRS agents are inadequately trained to do the real complicated stuff. They can't do the audits on complicated returns that tax accountants of the wealthy can snow the IRS with. Wealthy folks can slow and clog the pipeline so much that perhaps 10 or 12 IRS agents can be stuck on one single case for months, even years at a time. The cost-benefit analysis for going after the rich is a losing proposition for the IRS. So what do you think those 89,000 new IRS agents are going to be focusing in on? Remember, they'll be new and fresh and green and even less likely to go after the big boys. It takes a lot of time and specialization to audit the returns of the wealthy. They'll concentrate on middle America, the low-hanging fruit. And they'll go after anyone who checked the cryptocurrency box on the 1040 form. Besides that, the IRS still uses the same technology from 60 years ago, a system called the IMF, the Individual Master File, written in a language called COBOL, an ancient programming language created by IBM in the 60s. And though millions have been earmarked to upgrade the system, there's at least 60 case management systems in the IRS that are not interconnected. So even now, IRS employees must transcribe or input information from one system to another by email or manually. So until Janet Yellen, who's asked the IRS to create a modernization plan in the next 6 months, until they get technology upgrades, that'll take a couple of years. There are real IRS system limitations and functionality, preventing taxpayers from obtaining details about the status of their own cases. Meanwhile, last Friday, September 2nd, 2022, the Internal Revenue Service acknowledged it mistakenly published confidential information of about 120,000 taxpayers on its public website for all to see. Get this, the information was uploaded due to a human coding error that occurred last year. When confidential forms for individuals and charities with unrelated business income were mistakenly uploaded with public data to the agency's website. That bad news comes right on the heels of a report that the IRS accidentally destroyed 20 million tax returns from the year 2020. So, what does this have to do with expats who file their taxes from foreign countries? You know, Americans abroad have suffered a long list of indignities trying to comply with U.S. tax laws. The thing is, most expats who work don't owe the IRS in the States any money at all, because they're on the tax rolls in the country they're working in. Because of the double taxation laws, you only pay taxes in one country, the country you're working in. In addition, if you live outside of the U.S. for more than 1 year, you get a huge tax exclusion. That's an exemption of around $110,000 for money earned outside the U.S. But even though less than 20% of all people living outside the United States pay taxes at all, they don't have to, legally. They must still fill out incomprehensible forms that demand information that's often unavailable or ambiguous at a huge cost of time, money, worry, and stress. For example, some expats who own plain vanilla mutual funds registered in the United States are finding themselves in trouble with the IRS. By the way, lots of employers in the United States put retirement investments in these schemes by default. To the IRS, they're called passive foreign investment companies, PFICs. And if you're living outside the States and your retirement plan is invested in one of those, the resulting paperwork is considered the most complex in the entire American tax code. And the tax rates on that stuff? Ridiculous. And for American expats living abroad, there's more misery to come. If, for example, he or she marries a foreigner, that's a red flag for IRS trouble. Even though marriage is one of the reasons why many Americans move overseas in the first place. In marriage, she or he may face nightmares about joint accounts, inheritance, and more. That's before considering the effect it might have on any children. Even more IRS punishment awaits gringos and expats living in Latin America, for example, who own a foreign business or corporation. If you happen to own more than 10% of a foreign company, the number of tax forms you'll have to fill out are monumental. And the tax rates, disgusting too. And we haven't even mentioned those notorious FATCA laws, you know, Foreign Account Tax Compliant Act laws, notorious Obama-era legislation that has complicated, even screwed up the lives of many U.S. expats. Considering that particular law, the FATCA law, that forces foreign banks to report all the activities of their gringo clients, That law has kept countless foreign banks and brokers from taking on any more gringo expat clients. That's why, since the Obama days, it's been so hard for gringos and expats to get bank accounts in foreign countries unless they've already got residency. The unintended consequences of these laws are terrible. Trapping and snaring thousands of unaware, accidental Americans in the nets of the IRS and FinCEN. Many of the affected U.S. citizens are people who had the good and bad fortune of their parents being in the U.S. when they were born. So, they have U.S. citizenship, but otherwise no connection to America. They probably don't even live there. One day, they receive a letter informing them that the IRS is after them. Could be they left the States 2 weeks after they were born and never went back. Doesn't matter. You still are required to report all your worldwide income for the rest of your life. So even if you don't live in the States, any American citizen or person with a green card must pay or file taxes to a place they don't reside or receive any benefits from. Crazier yet, or maybe it's not so crazy, the U.S. wants to keep its hooks into you. They don't want you to renounce your citizenship, because then you're not taxable. Coincidentally, almost exactly concurrent with the FATCA rules, the cost of giving up American citizenship, already the highest in the world before, was secretly raised 500%. In who else? Obama's term, of course. You know, the ex-president, the Nobel Peace Prize winner who's worth over $90 million right now. Meanwhile, the cost to renounce your citizenship was secretly raised 500%. Well, maybe not so secretly. We've mentioned it here a couple of times already. The thing is, there are a million reasons why people born in the U.S. at some point in their lives find themselves living overseas, in Latin America, for example. Well, with 89,000 more IRS agents and their associated battering rams and SWAT teams coming on board starting next year, it's very timely that our friend Senor Flash Gordo asks what the future holds for gringos and expats who are sick of it. They just can't take it anymore. There will be a rush, he thinks, and I think so too, of gringos and expats who escape south of the border. They get a 180-day or 90-day visa and never leave. Many will have no intention of going back. So technically, when the visas run out, then what? They become illegals in Latin America. Irony of ironies, huh? It seems ass backwards. But you know, even in the old Hollywood gangster movies, there was always talk of robbing a bank or breaking out of the slammer and heading south of the border by a little fishing boat in an isolated little beach town. Escape the past and the rat race and all that. Question is it still possible? Well, yeah, it's being done all the time. There are countless little towns and villages out in the boonies or little beach towns too, where if you hang around for a few days at the beach or the local cantina, you're bound to spot a gringo or two, usually with a Latino wife or family. Yep, I'm always spotting gringos who appear to have gone native. No one seems to care about their past or even ask about it. And if they do, I think many of these guys have created their own new backstory. And no one, least of all the lard-ass government officials, are chasing him down. It's live and let live, and as long as he doesn't bother anybody, no one will bother him. In fact, over the years, even very recently, I've run into expats and gringos whose documents have expired. Some who don't have passports or have lost their passport. Or at least that's what they claim. It's my opinion you can live a really nice life in a beach town or out in the boonies as long as you're not in a tourist area like Costa Rica, Cancun, Tulum, Puerto Vallarta. The fact is, if you're on the lam on the run or just an illegal alien whose papers have expired and can't stand the idea of going back to the States, you can live a nice, laid-back, happy life in a place like Guatemala, Salvador, Bolivia, Paraguay, Brazil, a lot of different places. As long as, like I said, you're not on the gringo tourist trail, you're laid-back and calm and don't bother anybody. Then, most likely, no one will ever bother you. But for sure, you're going to be stuck in that country. You better plan on living there the rest of your life, because you're not going to get across borders with expired documents. The other thing is, you're going to have some kind of income, right? Believe me, gringos and expats find ways to make money. As you know from listening to this show, it doesn't take much, because the cost of living is very much lower here in Latin America. It all depends, too, on your style of living, right? And the key to all that, and being able to maintain a bank account, sign property and rental contracts, have a Miami mailbox, get stuff from Amazon, etc., is to have a good lawyer. Now, as to Senor Flash Gordo's question about, is it maybe better to fade away or get lost in a big city? Again, it depends on your style of living. Some people like or love big cities. They wouldn't have it any other way. I've met people, for example, who've come down from New York. They move to a small town and get bored out of their wits in a couple of months. It seems to me big city expats that come down telling me they just got to get out of this city. They want nothing more than to live a quiet retirement life. Sort of become a gentleman farmer. Well, they may say that at first, but some are just too hyper from all those years in the big city to pull it off. That's why it's always a good idea to, when you first get down, rent for at least 6 months in a place you've been investigating. Most of us gringos and expats don't hit the bullseye first time down. Though eventually, after some exploring, they home in on what works well for them. All right, now an email from our Aussie friend Ben. He says, "G'day, Johnny. I'm sitting here in Vancouver Airport, catching up on the past couple of months of shows." Then he says, "If this isn't a sign of the effed up times, I don't know what is. I've been in Mexico for the past month, and can you believe, for me, an unvaxxed Aussie, to get into Mexico, at the moment, you need to go through the People's Republic of Canada to get there." That's right, he says, "We can transit through Canada, but we're not allowed out of the airport. Normally," he says, "I would have gone through Los Angeles Airport, but the Yanks are still running a plandemic vax agenda there. Will it ever end?" Then he says, "I just heard your show talking about Latin musicians, and I completely agree with you. Like everywhere, they've got their ordinary guys, but bloody hell, can some of them play? I heard some great players in Mexico and some who spent a bit of time in Cuba. That place, their music is at the next level. And in regards to your comments about Eric Clapton being canceled because of his vax stance, here's something I've been thinking about for the last couple of years. Where are all the bands that have been singing about freedom and rotten governments that we have right now? So much music I listen to is about corrupt politicians, inequality, the rights of people, etc. No one seems to be chiming in on rotten recent events. I wish Frank Zappa was around, throwing his 2 cents worth. Keep up the music talk, Johnny. It's quality stuff. Also, I know you're not a fan of Mexico as a Plan B destination, and I don't plan on moving there myself. It's all relative. I'd rather live there than Australia. Anyway, Johnny, I must be away. About to board now, officially over the halfway mark of my 35-hour door-to-door journey. Signed, Aussie Ben." All right, thanks for that, Ben. 35 hours, you say. Man, you Aussies are tough. Anyway, as usual, on today's show, I haven't been able to get through half the stuff I wanted to talk about. Well, we'll get to it next time. That said, before we close, I want to remind you about my Expat Insider Seminar coming up in November 2022. That's about 2 months away. It'll be in the DR, the Dominican Republic, this time. Don't forget, if you sign up by September 15, you get $500 off the regular price. And since this show first goes out on Friday, September 9th, you've got 6 days to sign up to take advantage of that discount. Man, are we going to have a great time. For all the details, agenda, and the sign-up info, just go to expatplanb.com. That's expatplanb.com. Then click on the seminar link in the center of the page.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.